Welcome to my dojo. This is Kung Fu Pizza Party. I'm your host, Brandon Knight, and today we're going to the arcade. This is the first episode in the year-long series, Kung Fu Pizza Party Goes to the Arcade, where in each episode in this series, we are going to prepare ourselves for the upcoming Mortal Kombat 2 and Street Fighter movies by taking a dive into the video game world. There are so many video games getting movie adaptations this year, more than just MK2 and Street Fighter. We have really entered the era of the video game movie genre, pop culture time frame. And so I'm excited, going to be doing a lot of different kinds of episodes. But for this first stop, we are going to be talking about the lore of Mortal Kombat. And to help me with today's conversation, he hails from the bearded... I am flubbing today. Thoughts from a bearded geek, Joe Day. Joe, welcome to the dojo.
Mood, I am jazzed to be here and to get a chance to nerd out with you again.
It's been a while. Joe and I used to be a tag team over at Systematic Geekology. I don't think we ever did any Mortal Kombat over there. We did a Ninja Turtles episode. No. We did do that.
No. Yeah. We did a Ninja Turtles episode. We did a wrestling episode that was specifically just for us.
Yes. Yeah. It only had two downloads and you're looking at them like,
I don't think we've ever had a chance to delve into this side of geekdom.
Yeah. So I'm excited. Love Mortal Kombat. It is, for me, if I'm going to pick the two big ones, I will pick Mortal Kombat before I pick Street Fighter. And I will, unless it's Tekken 3, I'm not picking Tekken at all. Just kind of my preference. But Joe, here on Kung Fu Pizza Party, I seek to deliver high-flying action in 30 minutes or less and serve up some wisdom one slice at a time. How you feeling about that challenge here today?
I think I can manage it.
30-minute Iron Man match. We got this, right?
Yep.
There we go. Before we get it...
It's funny, though, with... Good.
I was going to say, before we get into that, tell us a little bit about thoughts from a bearded geek and your other programs, but go ahead and finish your thought first.
So as far as thoughts from a bearded geek, it's thoughtful conversations about the media that we love, from movies to comics to pop culture. It is having conversations about the characters, about the fandoms, and celebrating the things about these fandoms that we absolutely love. Our whole thing on Thoughts from a Bearded Geek is that there's something for everyone. So our goal is to really celebrate these things that exist for the fans that they exist for.
Yeah, and listeners, obviously, as always, there will be a link in the description of this episode to get you over to Thoughts from a Bearded Geek and the other great content over at KFM. But if you are, I have a feeling that if you like this show, you'll probably like what Joe's doing over there too, because we try to do thoughtful reflection here as well when it comes up in the media that we're consuming and not just passively consuming whatever the case may be, because oftentimes there's good stuff to kind of sit and chew on when we actually take our time to really think through the media we are consuming. And also part of KFM, don't you guys got a video gamer over there that streams?
Yeah. TC, he's constantly putting out Sonic content specifically and does like Twitch live streams, things like that.
I will maybe we'll have to see if we can get him over here sometime this year to be part of our arcade series. Although Sonic, what would I do with Sonic? I love Sonic the Hedgehog. Don't get me wrong. Just having to tie it in. What martial arts would each Sonic character train in? Maybe something goofy like that.
Yeah.
Knuckles is obvious, right?
Oh yeah, 100%.
Yeah, you'd be like boxing or maybe like Kyokushin or something like that, right?
Something like that, yeah.
Something along those lines.
Very physical based.
Very. Very strike heavy. Yeah. Okay, maybe we'll talk off air. Maybe we can make something like that work out, have TC on the show at some point. So, again, today we're jumping into the lore of Mortal Kombat as we get ready for MK2 coming out in May. Joe, what was, if you can recall, your earliest introduction to the world of Mortal Kombat?
It was definitely the game. I had a Sega growing up, and so played MK1, played MK2. Absolutely, still to this day, adore both movies. Yes, I said it. Have to speak my truth. Annihilation is unfairly criticized, especially when you consider all of the limitations. The fact that that movie even exists is an amazing thing. But yeah, I was literally like straight down the middle, age-wise, temperament-wise, the things I was into. I was the key target audience for the initial craze of Mortal Kombat.
Nice. So was it, I've seen the old commercials, the kid running out of school and being like, Mortal Kombat! Was that, so that was, were you the kid? You were the kid growing up?
Yes.
Love that.
Yes, that was it. I remember when they finally started giving lore to the, well, lore beyond the end credit scenes at the end of the first couple of games, but I'm sure we'll get there. But when they started giving like story beyond palette swap ninjas, that was like, it was like this thing that we had been following, that we were like the underground nerds, right? Because while it was capitalizing on post-80s action and 70s kung fu and all of the things that came before it to kind of pave the way, mm-hmm. it was still like not as like mainstreamly popular as some of the other games that were out. It wasn't a Mario.
Okay.
It wasn't a side-scrolling platformer, and thus was really the thing that paved the way a lot for side-scrolling beat-em-ups in that style.
Gotcha. And Joe is a big Ninja Turtles fan, so I will just ask you this now. Yes. Were you also obsessed with the side-scrolling Ninja Turtle video games as well? Because I know I've never played those, but I know those are beloved.
Oh, yeah. I have behind me, I have the original first one in a like the cartridge for it.
Nice.
I've bought every remaster that they've put out, every collection that they've put out so far. I have
nice.
a version of it. Yeah, those games 1000% hold up. If you are into the style of gaming that is platforming, just like Mortal Kombat, those games built the infrastructure of home console entertainment.
Nice. And I love how, you know, you said that the Mortal Kombat kind of hit like a more underground demo with kids. And yet this game, even though it was maybe a little bit more niche in the market, made such a political impact and is one of the main reasons why we have the video game rating system that we do now. Because in case you've never played a Mortal Kombat game, you will see spines. Heads will be coming off. You will be launching people. Didn't you have to put in like a cheat code to get the blood to show up? It was one of the consoles. There was a cheat code.
Yeah. So there's a lot of back and forth with ratings and censorship and all of that sort of stuff. Like for the video game world, Mortal Kombat really is the one that brought that conversation to the forefront because they didn't hold back. And when the home console market really started to explode, it was a front runner for packing titles and you know these underground sensations and all of that sort of stuff that they wanted to making it such a flagship title meant that you were backing this game that chose to not play by the rules, that mm-hmm. chose to be gory and show the effects and all of that sort of stuff. And so in a response to that, one of the versions of the original home console games has no blood, but they worked in a cheat that if you put it in, you turned on all of the gore anyway.
Love that. I think they did that infamously with one of the Grand Theft Auto games. One of them has like a secret backdoor plot that got leaked that was going to be this like whatever the equivalent of NC-17 is in video games. And they found like a backdoor like mod cheat code way that you can actually still do some of it. So you said a moment ago that with Mortal Kombat, you know, the lore showed up later, because I think when people think of these kinds of games, even with Street Fighter, especially some of the earlier ones, that when they maybe they think of these games, it's just mindless violence for the sake of mindless violence fun. We're just beating each other up on a limited screen. So what is the lore? If for those who don't know, like, what is the actual, like, what is going on here other than some kind of death tournament thing?
You have to break the lore of Mortal Kombat up into eras in order to make it all make sense. Because really what it started off was, let's make a beat 'em up with next to no money that really capitalizes on the arcade environment, and then how do we port this over onto home consoles? So it's a lot of palette swap ninjas. It's the exact same character model, just color swapped. And you had dialogue scenes or text scenes after you beat the game with each character that basically gave a continuation of their story. And so you would go through and every character kind of had their follow-up page of text that said, like, this is what happens when they won the Mortal Kombat tournament. And canonically, it's Liu Kang who had his ending is the true ending. And so that only extended for the first couple through like these scenes that happen either, you know, at the beginning of the game, or, you know, you get it piecemealed throughout different people's text pages. And so you put together that MK1 is essentially a last chance tournament for Earthrealm. There's different realms. And Outworld has won 9 of the last tournaments that basically say, if you win 10 Mortal Kombat tournaments, a series of matches between the best of each realm, then the winning realm can invade the losing realm and take it over. All of this is governed by the Elder Gods. And so it doesn't matter what happens. There's no real moral code. It's just you can't take over until you win 10. Earth wins because of Liu Kang defeating Goro and then Shang Tsung. Earthrealm survives. We get to the second one. Shao Kahn is essentially demanding a rematch, but in Outworld, and he's like, said Mortal Kombat, and so we have to do Mortal Kombat, even though Earth literally has no reason to do this. But again, the lore is building as the thing is already up in the air. And again, Liu Kang this time defeats Shao Kahn, who's like the next level big bad, over Shang Tsung. Then you get Mortal Kombat 3, where Shang Tsung invades Earthrealm by exploiting a loophole with a character named Sindel, who is the mother of Kitana, the love interest of Liu Kang. And Earthrealm is in a state of chaos because Outworld is invading and breaking the rules. And this one was supposed to be much more bombastic because now we're heading into the era where home console is starting to be considered. And so we're trying to get more characters in there and all of that. But again, we're still only really working through text pages that you kind of have to go out of your way or read supplemental material like the owner's guide and different things like that to really put together that, you know, the first one, straightforward Mortal Kombat, Liu Kang is the chosen one. He fights through the tournament. He beats Shang Tsung. Second one, wash, rinse, repeat, except for Shao Kahn. Third one, we're splicing it up a little bit because we're breaking the rules and it's an invasion story more than it is an outright and right tournament story. But again, we end with Liu Kang defeating Shao Kahn and the Earthrealm is restored to its wholeness. This is what's known as the classic era. 1 through 3, that is all in the model of side-scrolling beat-em-ups with these text pages and all of that sort of stuff. It would be with MK4 that we would start to enter the 3D era, where you start to see more of an emphasis being put on actually building out the story, actually building out different scenarios, because now we're working with more than a 32-bit system and something that can handle renderings rather than just text on a page with stylized graphics and things like
that. Gotcha. That makes sense. Okay. I love the and in the third one, they found a loophole part. That's so – that is so comic book. That is so – campy. It's like, haha, we hired a lawyer and found out that we can still do this. I do also appreciate, I mean, it makes sense since you were going through the lore, because I think another thing that people maybe sometimes misunderstand about Mortal Kombat is that there is a central figure. I feel like Mortal Kombat, especially compared to Street Fighter, it's a little bit more like, at least in my experience, you play your favorite characters. You know, you play as your favorite characters. You do the arcade style fighting each other. Whereas with Street Fighter, I feel like it's a little bit more, you know, like we know, oh, Ryu, Ken Masters, Kun Li, you know, the whole bit is like a little bit more forward of like, these are the main and Guile, if you're, you know, a Van Damme fan. love that movie, though. I'm very excited to review that movie. It's been a while since I've seen it. But so go again on who is our main protagonist here in this series.
So this is at least through the first several games. Now we're gonna start to see a shift as the story unfolds. But up until this point, it is 1000% the Liu Kang show. Liu Kang, he's got his love interest Kitana, and he's got Sonya Blade and Jax and Raiden as like the entourage around him. But he is always the chosen figure. He is always the protag of what is happening, that we know that all of this is going to reliably end up on Liu Kang's shoulders. And he's going to be the one that defeats the bad guys ultimately. And that's why you saw in the 95 movie the emphasis on it being Liu Kang, because in essence what they were doing was fast-tracking the lore of the first two games with basically the entirety of the first story. It had elements of the first two games, and that's the same motivation that they had with Annihilation. Just with Annihilation, it was less of a faithful adaptation. They just went different directions, and there's a lot of reasons for that: different directors, different actors, the whole nine yards, studio interference. But the first one is very much a give me an adaptation of essentially what the first set of games is trying to tell me about the world and universe of Mortal Kombat. And short of Scorpion and Sub-Zero being minions of Shang Tsung, other than that particular plot point, generally you've got it. You've got an on-screen adaptation of it. And I just want to take 30 seconds to tell people, like, for those of you that were not alive during this time or too young to remember or whatever the case may be, let me tell you, up until this point, what people knew as video game adaptations lived and died on Super Mario Brothers up until this point. And that movie was a trip.
Bad.
You had comic book adaptations that varied as far as success. You had ones that were dynamite, you had ones that were absolute trash, and everything in between. But real video game adaptations, they were not considered a viable form of investment, and because of what had been done. And so to have a movie that says, here's the lore, here are the puzzle pieces, make an on-screen adaptation of it. The people that were involved in that, committing to the bit that they did, the individual characters, are the backbone and heartbeat of why that movie works the way that it does. But the fact that they even try is in and of itself an enormous deal. And so there's a reason why it's not just 90s nostalgia. The movie actually holds up. It's actually a legitimate movie. Does it have its quirks? Absolutely, it has its quirks. Go back and watch any Bruce Lee movie, any Chuck Norris movie, The Crow, any kind of 70s kung fu, whatever. Take your pick. They all have their quirks. You're adapting a martial arts concept. You're going to need to be quirky if you are going to live in a world where people spontaneously break out into martial arts fights. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's but that movie needs to be celebrated as a very, very important note in cinema, in video games, because that movie did what TMNT 1990 did for the Turtles. It took it from something that was popular and made it a phenomenon.
It's been a minute since I've seen the original 95 Mortal Kombat film. That was my earliest introduction to Mortal Kombat. I saw the movie before I played the games. I don't know if that's the same thing as watching the movie before you read the book, but that's the order I did it in. And I'm going to rewatch it and review it for the show here, hopefully next month in February. But the only thing I really remember is that the CGI was it's a little wonky now compared to what we're used to. Outside of that, like, it's a solid. It's a solid martial art movie, and by way of video game movies at the time, yeah, it's probably one of your best contenders for. Yeah.
I would still, if we're just going with video game adaptations, then I still put it in. I definitely put it in the conversation of the top five. I could solidly hear an argument for top three when it comes to that.
We're starting to get close on our time, so I'll rapid fire a few things for you here. First off, when you sit down to play, who do you play as? Who's your favorite character, and why is it Sub-Zero? Because that's the right answer.
It was Sub-Zero.
Okay.
1,000%. I was one of those. I also really liked playing with Raiden because he does a move that was never originally supposed to be called the Superman, but he literally flies forward in with his arms extended. Because fans would call it the Superman in later games, it got named that. Like, if you pull up the move list, it's
that's awesome. Good for the fans. Proud of you, fans. Yes.
I will say Ed Boon is in something to bias. The original guys that started it. Mm-hmm. They cared. They've always cared about the fan base. They've always been very, very dedicated to the fan base of Mortal Kombat.
And one last question before we get out of here. How you feeling about Mortal Kombat 2?
Oh, kill off Cole inside of 30 seconds and tell a story. That's all I'm saying. Like, So Cole is essentially Liu Kang by any other name. Why not, for the love of everything that's holy, just do Liu Kang? It worked.
Really?
You didn't need the modernized take of Sub-Zero and Scorpion. I thought that was
okay.
So, listeners of Kung Fu Pizza Party, I want you guys to do me a favor. Show up and show out by downloading this one and let Brandon know that y'all want to hear me come back and go through the rest of the eras, because really, in all actuality, we could do an episode per era in the lead up for MK2, but you gotta let Brandon know that you want to hear all of that by downloading the episode.
And I'm curious, how many more would that be? How many more eras we got? Because we got through the original trilogy. What do we got, like two or three more? Three more? Okay, three more. And I think we all saw what you did there, Joe. Yes, you can come back for Mortal Kombat Annihilation. I was already planning on doing it. I was already planning on having you back for Annihilation. But yeah, it looks like we'll be here with Mortal Kombat for a while. But I think it's time for us to start wrapping things up. Had a little bit of technical difficulties, so hopefully the cleaned up version of this works for everybody. Thank you, Joe, for taking some time to get through this first trilogy with us. And like you said, folks, if we want to get through all of it, I want to see some good numbers here on this episode. But if you want to check out all the things that Joe's got going on, you can find a link for that in the description of this episode, along with all the other links, the Instagram, the Letterboxd, all that other stuff. Thank you for listening. This has been Kung Fu Pizza Party, where I think we delivered high-flying action in 30 minutes or less, or we got really close, which is impressive for the two of us. And served up some wisdom one slice at a time.